All right, welcome to episode 560. Owen, this is one for you, buddy. We're talking. I have a feeling at the end of this episode, you're going to want a group of Poplin pythons.
Are we talking Papuan carpets or
no.
Papuan? Good. That's already starting to brew
the
in my
serpent of Indonesia.
That's already starting to brew in the back of my head, and it's only getting worse. And if Riley hits that clutch, like I think he said something along the lines of, "If I get Papuans, you send me roughies." Like if you like that, that may happen very quickly if that does click. So
we have Cody Joe McEwen from the Reptile Shop in Deers. Rings? Did I get that right?
Red Deer.
Okay. Yeah. You did not get that right. You got that not. So wrong it was ridiculous. You added words that were not there.
Yes.
Like, it was.
So anyway. I'm excited to talk. Obviously, we're going to be talking to all types of Indonesian pythons. Liasis, of course. That's
some.
Your favorite, Owen.
Liasis and I have a love-hate relationship. Well, Liasis and I have a love-hate relationship. I love Liasis. The only ones that seem to love me back are my olive pythons. Everybody else, hatred. So yeah. I'll get there, though. I'll win them over slowly but surely.
Yes.
But
we're going to get into that. Real quick, I just wanted to shout out that if people are looking for an podcast to listen to, Boas just came out and they had Quetzal Dwyer on talking about herping for boas and finding raising boas in Costa Rica. That's a bad episode for you too, Owen. What the hell?
I want to go herping for boas. That's a problem. If I go herping for boas,
yes,
I'm gonna want more boas, you know. And I just was reading something that didn't they just bring out a brand new species in Brazil?
Yeah. Great. I'm not going to go down that road because we butchered the
We got yelled at for that. Yeah. There was a lot.
There's four. Yeah. I was right. There's four species.
Yeah. Durmel's boas are not Madagascar ground boas. We know. Yeah.
Exactly.
Not boa people. Yeah. So
real quick, talking about boas, look at that.
Damn, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Saranim red-tail boa.
I don't know.
Cody has.
Damn,
I don't know.
Like,
is that something you breed, Cody? Do you breed boas?
I hope that will be. I used to have Surinams, and then I didn't have any for a long time, and I ended up with this pair. Somebody was getting rid of them because they were stunted, so they were getting rid of them just to pet-only homes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I reached out, and I was like, I think I'll get them to size. And like, all right.
Stunted. Get out of the way. Let me handle this. And then,
They're getting there. They're putting on, I'm thinking like not next season, but the one after probably they'll be good.
Before we get too far into it, what is the cage behind you?
That's a quince monitor cage.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. That is
wow,
huge.
Man. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
There's like a full tree in there. Like, that is amazing.
You'll probably see them at some point. I threw a bunch of chicks in there, so we'll go up and bask in a minute.
Nice. Very cool. Well, welcome to Morelia Python Radio. We're glad to have you. Absolutely. So I guess tell us how you got started in this. There's so much for us to talk about with you, but like, how did you get your start in reptiles?
I was just like obsessed from the time I was a little kid. That's all I talked about. And then I used to collect like garter snakes and stuff and keep them.
Uh-huh.
And at one point I got, I used to hang out at the local pet store.
Uh-huh.
So when I was eight, they had this big corn snake there and he told me I could have it for $300. So I 300 bucks.
what corn snake was this? Jeez.
I know. I had no better guidance.
Yeah.
And then, I just like collected bottles and cans and flipped some trampolines in the bargain finder and then ended up with the corn snake. And then when I was 11, I started breeding Biberon geckos.
Okay.
And that's when I started vending expos and stuff. And then I just spent every penny from there on more reptiles. And
it is a cycle, right? Like, yeah. I made enough at the last reptile show that I went out and got myself a Brisbane Coastal. And I was like, I did this for me. And I'm like, wait a minute. Well, more coal for the fire. Yeah. So
it's counting your expenses.
Right? Exactly. It's fine. Yeah. It's check. But cool. So what kind of drew the Indonesian pythons to the front? Or is it just kind of like you just did the whole Noah's Ark thing like we all do? And you were like, yes.
As soon as I seen him originally.
There's a lizard. There it is.
Yeah, there it is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's hanging. Yeah, he's over on the ball.
Eating some chicks. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. That's
great. I love it.
Yeah, I'll be choking him back. He's big, too.
Yeah, I was expecting, but no, that's awesome.
But yeah, no, there was this old school guy, Gord Redman, used to breed Macklot pythons.
Okay.
And then I seen them and I seen the iridescence. And then from there, I seen olives and stuff. And I used to look at Nerd's website back in the day and seen the Pawquins.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a room full of boas and carpets. And then we had a house fire.
Oh.
And then after that, I always noticed everybody would be like, oh, my dream snake is a white lip python or something, but they'd have a room full of boas.
Right.
So I always thought it was weird. So I decided after I kind of got to restart that I would just work on the dream collection. If I would say my dream snake, those were the snakes I was going to collect. And it happened to be all Indonesian pythons and Australian pythons. And
there are a lot of that where it's like, I have my dream snake is this. And it's like, there it is. Like, it's right here. It's like, yeah, but no, 10 grand can't have it now. It's available.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I thought that was weird, but
yeah, that is kind of odd. I mean, you'll probably appreciate this. Is that the last reptile show I had olive pythons and stuff on my table, and the one guy wanted to buy one so that he could breed it to a Macklot python and create the world's first. The look on your face is the exact one I believe I had.
No.
Why would you do that? It's not really going to enhance it, but it's a world's first, and that's where the money is. What money? What are you talking about?
And you know what? It's not a world's first because somebody offered me a Macklot olive hybrid 5 years ago.
What did it look like? I'm curious.
Kind of what you would expect it to look like. It was almost like a speckled olive python.
Yeah, no, yeah. I don't like it.
Stupid, yeah. Right.
Well, now we know.
Yeah, don't do it. Remember
the Macklot's didn't sell him anything.
Yeah, the right? Macklot's carpet that you the yelled Macklot's at.
Carpet was like, it looked like a jungle carpet almost. Yeah, I was like, holy shit, that could really pass for a carpet python.
You yelled at it in a full room full of people. Yeah. I
was about to flip the tables over.
Like, no. I had to drag you away. But yeah, it was
so it was cool. A Macklot carpet?
Yeah, it was a Carplutz, but it looked terrible name. But it was a Carplutz and it looked like, say, an ugly coastal.
I would assume that would end up looking like a scrub or something.
It didn't even, like, you'd think, like, no elongated face, no nothing. It didn't look like there weren't really that many weird proportions, and the carpet pattern just took control. Yeah. So, danger. Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
It is.
So, when you were getting back into it and putting your dream collection together, what was the
shortlist? Yeah.
The top five, if you will, because I know you're probably like us where you can't pick a, you know, necessarily your favorite.
I mean, for me at the time, the biggest was White Lips Olives Pawquins.
Oh, okay.
Cool. But pretty much, yeah, anything smooth and iridescent really was the biggest on that list. So I had a bunch of spotteds and stuff too back in the day, which I would like to get into. But and I used to have a bunch of carpets, but
yeah, nice. Well, I mean, if you're gonna go off on a tangent away from carpet, we fully support an Indonesian tangent. Like, you know, if you're gonna break off, that go do it.
It's the break.
Yeah. Those are the ones, yeah.
Yeah. If you were to tell us it like an all fossorial, I'd be like, I'm confused. How did you go from? But yeah, this works.
No, I do have some of that stuff too, but
oh, good.
How did you get to a reptile shop? Like what?
Yeah.
What brought you to that?
Well, me and my girlfriend at the time, actually, we were kind of talking about maybe trying to make like a 5-year plan or something. Mm-hmm. I had always noticed, like, I was from Calgary, which is one of the main cities out here, and I always noticed that Red Deer had, everybody was always posting asking if anybody was coming from Edmonton or Calgary that could deliver stuff.
Oh, okay.
And so I noticed that there was a market here, and there was like no breeders here. There's tons of breeders in Edmonton, tons of breeders in Calgary, but there's nothing here.
Right here, yeah.
So we always spoke about it, but then one day an investigator from the city came to my house, and it was about, because we had a double car attached garage, and I was breeding stingrays out there.
Okay.
And, they approached me about the stingrays, of all things. And when I opened the door, it was one of those houses that's got like the big dining room in the front, and then there's another one in the back. Mm-hmm. And then the front was, it was all monitors. And then so he's seen that, and technically, apparently, it was a business. I tried to argue it, but he's like, well, you got business cards? Well, I mean, yeah, but.
Shit. All right, go ahead.
You got me. Yeah. So then it was, they tried to make us apply for this like Class 2 land permit that enables you to have a business in the house, you know? Mm-hmm. It would fall under what a kennel would fall under.
Okay.
Right.
But it enabled you to use up to 20% of the square footage. And we were using the whole thing. So it wasn't going to get approved, and they wanted us to just keep paying and reapplying.
Uh-huh. Just go to hell.
yeah, it doesn't make sense. So it was rather unconventional. We just literally like came and looked at a building in Red Deer.
Okay.
And then we took our last paychecks from the pet store. Like, we didn't even have any money saved up or nothing. But I had like 40 exoterras that were full of tree boas and stuff. So we moved out here, and I already had all the cages, right? I just moved the snakes into tubs, used all the cages for the store. And then, like, I had a lot of animals to sell, too, so we put the animals in there. And
right.
There just so happened to be they were renting apartments on the top of the building, too. And so I rented those apartments and just connected it all. And then,
oh, nice.
Jesus.
It was like an over the weekend thing. We just quit our job in 9 years, and we're like, we don't know anybody in Red Deer, but we'll give it a whirl.
There are some people who were like, it took me years and I found the correct building. You're like, these people are pissing me off over my stingray. So fuck them. Yeah. I'm going to open up a store.
I had no business plan. I didn't have nothing. I was like, I just like told my girl at the time, I was like, well, I mean, I'll make it work. Let's go.
I got a lot of crap to sell. I'll figure it out. Yeah.
I mean, it turned out all right.
Yeah. So far, so good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not?
100%.
So,
I mean, go ahead, Owen.
I mean, like, so like your store, 100% reptile, or is it like a mixture of some other stuff?
No. So it's not including the top apartment area. It's like roughly 6,700 square feet. And then on the main floor, it's like 1,000 square feet or something, is store. And it's just reptile.
Okay.
And then the back half, I got people trying to get in here. and then behind there, it starts to get to a lot of fit, like all the stingrays and stuff are back there. Stuff,
yeah.
But it's amongst all the other breeder lizards. The lower half is mainly snakes, and there's a handful of lizards down there, too.
That's cool.
But pretty much, yeah, just reptiles. And then obviously, like, the feeder rodents and all that. But
so I'm curious about this. Is like, two questions. One, with supplying your stock, are you doing a lot of the breeding yourself to supply the store?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Like I breed Beardies just to, you know, stock the store. Mm-hmm. And then other than that, like I usually have kind of one of everything that I've produced in the store.
Okay.
So it's all filler. Like most of the stuff that I produce ends up getting shipped out east.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
The in the store stuff is not usually any of that rare stuff. It's so that stuff I just bring in, whether it's from other local breeders or whether they're, you know, from wholesalers or whatever, mm-hmm. what it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I find the everyday in the store stuff, especially in Red Deer, right? Like there's a handful of like hardcore keepers here, mm-hmm. but it's not the biggest city. So, in store is mainly a lot of frogs and geckos and beardies and,
like your typical pet stuff,
the stuff,
right?
Stuff that would be the the bread and butter kind of stuff. I got you.
I mean, that is a good idea. Like, because this is what I was going to ask you as a follow up to that is like, I would imagine that if I had my own reptile store, and I would struggle with like getting in a new species or seeing this species, I would be like, oh man, I just have the way my brain works. It's like when I get into it, I go like 100%, and I would have a hard time like turning off, you know, oh, this species I never saw before or whatever, or never worked with it. Even if it's just a normal reptile,
it's bad. Yeah. Oftentimes when I'm ordering stuff, I'm like, well, okay, this pair's for me. This stuff, and then this will be for me. Or stuff will come in and I'll see it and I'll be like, well, this is got to stay in quarantine for longer.
Yeah. Well, I make the decision. Yeah. Oh, no, it's here now.
So it does happen. Or stuff will start breeding, and then I'll be like, all right, well, I'll just.
Well, now it has to stay.
Yeah.
But Eric would do the thing where he's like, the whole store needs scrubs, right? Yep. All the scrubs need to be like, no, dude, they can't
have
an entire wing of scrubs.
We can't sell scrubs, Eric. What are you doing?
Exactly. I want boas, just normal boas. Yes, the expensive ones. No, just, so I get the point. I get it there. So, but do you also do like dry goods and stuff like that too? Or is it just straight? Just the animals.
For I do dry goods too. I guess I would say like the opposite of like your typical pet store. You know what I mean? Where they've got like tons of dry goods and like a section of animals.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of animals.
And enough to get you started. Yeah, I got
and
you.
Then, I've got, you know, all the cages and substrates and lights and all of that stuff. But it's,
cool.
Yeah, there's definitely it's I would say 60-40, 60 towards the animals.
Okay.
I like that store better.
Yeah. A lot of people come in because there's a lot of big displays, like big plant displays and stuff. So a lot of people just come in like to look all the time.
To wander. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever wonder how many kids you're influencing, like you were influenced by hanging out at the pet shop?
Yeah.
I try and stay mindful of it.
Yeah.
Because you get busy or whatever and you're overwhelmed and people want to hold stuff and you're like, you know, oh man, that's just a, you know, whatever, a boa. Mm-hmm. But then I remember thinking back just like that 2 minutes of holding a boa at Petland or something. I was like, I still remember it to this day.
Right.
So I try and always really give them the attention and let them check out everything.
Gotcha.
Because it'll stick with you. Or I'll give them a big shed skin or something like that. Or
when you got your first skin, you're holding it, you're like, what the hell?
Exactly. Some kid's going to drape that in their room, and I'm like, that would go in the garbage. Like, that is trash.
Like, yeah, when I give them one, it's from, like, you know, like, I put all of Python.
Yeah.
Can you want to take this?
Yeah.
You roll it out like a...
I would have said, I went and I bought a bag of alligator scoots. Like just the armor plating back scoots. And it's just like, you just hand those out to like nieces, nephews, kids and stuff like that. And run off with it. And I think they cost me like 2 cents a scoot because I got them like in a big bag and I still have them. I'm still working my way through that giant ass alligator.
Willing if somebody gave me one of those.
That's my keychain. It's on my keys. My car keys have one.
Oh, so. All right. There you go. All right. Yeah, I mean, you know, me and Owen always joke about opening up. Like, we don't want to do the retail part of it. We just want to do the snake part of it.
I'd strangle him. I'd kill him. Yeah.
I don't know, man. Maybe Owen, we just need to quit our jobs and just go for it. What do you think?
Jesus Christ.
Make a reckless decision.
Yeah, man.
If you can get written permission from your wife, I'll try to get written permission from mine. Okay? And then we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
To let you guys know, I no longer have one, so it might not be the best decisions, but
but I have a store. Sell. It's like, well, I see.
Okay,
I'm not sure how this one can be taken, but all right, yeah. But I mean, as far as your collection goes, and not associated with the store, I guess maybe with associated with the store. Like, what's a brief overview of your collection, like how big and how many animals or different species?
Individual animals, it's not super crazy at the moment anyways. I've been really trying to refine the last couple of years, but I was counting snakes the other day and it was like 180 snakes, and then monitors I downsized a bunch too. I think there's like 30 adult monitors. And then I've got like collared lizards and the beardies and Fiji iguanas and,
Fiji iguanas,
Chinese crocodile lizards. So yeah, I would say, like maybe my collection, like 300 animals or something.
Okay.
That's not too crazy.
No.
Most of them are too big to be having, you know, 1,000 of them.
Like. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing, is if it can't fit in a 32 core drawer, like, I mean, yeah. So
yeah. The hide box is like 32 core.
Exactly. When it's bathing bin is a 48, like it's like, yeah, I can't really go too far. Yeah. Cool.
I want to talk Poplin pythons.
Yeah.
So I don't know how, what size group are you working with as far as Poplins go?
For Poplins, I've got, well, now I have 3.3. I've got 2.2 wild caught adults, and then I have a pair from the clutch that I produced.
Nice.
Okay.
And then I loosely tried to produce them again this year. Like, I was unsure if I was going to.
Mm-hmm.
And then last minute, I kind of seen the behavior that I had seen previously from the female. And so I tried to pair them up, but then the male was showing interest in her, but she was in full blue. And then by the time she shed, he was in full blue. And I was already right at the end. Like, I think I was just too late, I think, this year.
Okay.
Gotcha.
When dealing with them, is it something you kind of keep in the back of your mind that they can and will not be nice to each other?
Yeah. So the first time I paired them, I actually, the first night, I sat there with a coffee on, like I pulled an all nighter chair in front of the cage.
No, that is 100% what I would do. I would not pair them till a Friday so I could sit there like a crazy person.
Well, I had those, like they're called like Waze cameras or whatever.
Yeah.
Like hooked up your phone, right?
Yeah.
And then so I had that on there. And all day for like the week after, I'd be literally helping customers. I'm like, yeah. Looking at my phone, and I'm like, sorry, I'm just watching these.
Right. People walking out the door with stuff. You're like, yeah, bye. Thank you.
Sure, man. Yeah. What'd you say again? So it was nerve wracking, but I think if you get it at the right time, because, you know, like with a lot of other stuff, you just pair them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then maybe that'll trigger the female or what. But I noticed when I was successful with them, it was with my younger female that I had raised.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't going to pair her that season. I had the male paired with a really huge old female.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that young female, anytime you even touch the cage door, like she's coming out and she's trying to wrap you.
Yeah.
And so I changed the water and she didn't come out. Her head was out and then she just went back into her hide.
Okay.
Weird. So I lifted the hide and she was in this tight coil.
Uh-huh.
And then she hit her head. So I pulled her out. I palpated her. And there was 8 big follicles.
Wow.
So I pulled the male and stuck him with her. And then that was like January 26th. And then on the 27th, the next day, they were locked. And then for like a good month and a half, they were locked like every day.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And this year she did the same thing, but I was a little bit late on it. around the same time, like same
right.
day he did it.
Right. Are the pair that you have similar size?
Yeah, the male, she exploded in size over the last year, but at the time the male was probably a touch bigger than her.
Okay. Like
she was maybe 10 feet at the time.
You know, when I had them, that was one of the things that was sort of discussed about, you know, why they would prey on the either. Well, there was two theories. One would be that, to what you're saying, then it was like when they go into their season per se and they're going to breed, they sort of like that turns off, if you will.
Yeah.
And then the other part would be if they're way different in size, you know, they would look at it as prey, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That's, yeah, I seeing them day to day, like those suckers, man, if they smell any other snake there, I've had them smash cleaning bins. Like right into the bin and throw coils and squeeze it until it busts, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, they're definitely heavy snake feeders, I think.
Yeah. I had one that I got in. It was a wild caught. And it was probably maybe 5-6 feet. And I stupidly put it in this huge like glass aquarium that I had that was like that I was putting it in for quarantine. And it pushed. Broke the glass. It's like a crack going up the side. I'm like, oh shit!
It found a weak point and it was gonna push it. Yeah,
I think Rob has a story of that too, where it was like he had one and it pushed the glass, like just straight out broke the glass out
Jesus
of the
cage.
They're crazy. I have so the first ones I got, they came straight out of Indo, and I had. At the time, I lived with a roommate or whatever, and I had them in my room in quarantine, and I had a rack. Uh-huh. And I had all these wild-caught Savu pythons in the rack, too. And one of the poplins got out, and I was out of town for the weekend. One of the poplins got out, and it went down and pushed all the tubs
out of the rack. Yep.
Yeah. And I come – when I pull up, my roommate's out in the yard, and he's hollering and screaming. And I come in, he's got my whole door taped. It's gonna do something, and there's snakes everywhere, man.
So they're all pissed.
They ate the savages. But I found the pop one, and I picked it up, and I could hear clanking, like metal clanking.
Uh huh.
And I was like, there was a big stiff spot in the snake.
Please tell me it ate something stupid.
Shake the snake and hear like you hear something inside the snake. And I had this probe set that was in a plastic tube. And it just had this broken lid that was kind of set on, you know.
Right.
And for some reason, the snake ate the probe set in the plastic tube. And I thought it was a goner because I thought that the lid was going to come off and the probes were going to. And then within a week, it I'm pretty sure it crapped it out. But
God. It was the tube with the red stoppers on either end with the probes in it.
Yeah.
I have that. Yeah. What the hell is wrong with these things?
You can hear the probes. Like, they're
oh my God.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's
all right. These things are stupid.
Yeah.
I had a similar experience, but this was with carpets and they weren't eating probes or other snakes. But I went to Tinley Park and this was when I lived in an apartment and my second bedroom was that. And I came back and one of the carpets had gotten out and pushed all the tubs. Every carpet was out all over the room. Like, oh, thank God my wife didn't go in here. She taping the door. And I,
yep. I had a water python let all my baby Madagascar hognose loose.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
It took me several days, but I recovered all of them.
Nice.
I almost strangled that water python like it was.
Oh, that female?
Yeah. The hard bitch. Yeah. Oh, it was another point against her.
Water pythons suck. Yeah.
I hate them.
They only lay asses. I don't know.
I need
poor water pythons.
I need to check that box and then they're gone. They're never coming back.
Oh, man. Okay. So how do you keep your poplin pythons? Like, what's your approach to keeping them?
I keep them I'm in the middle of rebuilding my whole snake area.
Okay.
But it's pretty much the same, just going bigger cages, really. I have them in 8-foot by 2.5-foot cages. They're foot and a half tall. And then they just have a basking light on one end. And it's one of those 25-watt intense basking bulbs by Exoterra.
Right.
And I use the intense basking one because I can use only 25 watts, but the intense pushes the heat down enough to.
Oh, okay.
And then I just have a cat litter box, hide box, cool, under that light because it's a little bit lower, right? Okay. So they've got whatever, I don't know, 6 inches of space to bask on top of that hide, or they can bask in it.
Right.
And on the cold side, I just have a little bit of a bigger, for the females, it's like a tub full of moss, like a nest box.
Okay.
And then, yeah, just like a decent sized water dish that they could probably, I think they could fit in it.
If they cram themselves in there, they could get in it.
Yeah, and they never do. So
yeah, if they were motivated, they could get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I just keep them on coconut husk bedding.
Okay.
And then the way that it works now, like in those big cages with those 25-watt bulbs, the bulbs pretty much just run full power during the day, and then they're off at night. Okay. And then I control the room temperature for the most part.
Okay. And then I'll keep it like in the 80s or so?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the way I go about it is in the summertime, I will have – like set mild nighttime lows,
mm-hmm, okay,
extreme daytime highs. So in the summertime on a hot day, midday, the room, there's a possibility maybe it could hit 85. But on average, 80 to 82.
Okay.
Then at night, 77, 78.
That's perfect.
And then in the winter, it's reversed. It's just like mild set daytime high.
Right.
80, 82. But there'll be extreme nighttime lows where it would be 70, sometimes even 67, depending where you're.
Gotcha.
But my temps are always go back to the same during the day.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So even with the low, you still have, it's almost like how I do my bread lie. Like you have the low, but then you have the daytime, like sunrise, and they can still warm up if they want to.
Yeah. They're just getting cold nights and not extreme hot days.
Basically. Right. Right.
What's your thoughts with, just as a side tangent real quick, this is something that I've been thinking about, you know, like with the species that I keep, most of them are they bask a lot. And then you have some pythons that are sort of like those cryptic baskers or whatever. Mm-hmm. But as long as they're afforded the opportunity to heat up during the day, I find, I don't know, what's your guys' thoughts on just having no heat at night? Obviously, that's kind of what you're doing, Cody, to where you're turning it off.
Yeah.
But like, I think that there's this weird thing that I see with people that they're afraid for their snakes to get colder. It's, you know, it's like, I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think we kind of got pounded in our heads that cold snake equals sick snake equal dead snake. So I think that's something that we keep trying to fight against. I think I've gotten much more relaxed about that kind of stuff where, you know, 60 degrees is not necessarily horrible for them to get at. Keeping them at 60 degrees is probably constantly a terrible thing. Yes. Right. But if a night drop goes down, it's really not going to kill them. Like, it's really not going to be that bad, especially if they have like an 80 something degree day the next day. Like, why is that going to be a problem? So
I'm the same.
There you go.
I think there's a temperature range they want to be in, and you have to compensate. So if you go super low at night, you've got to get them right up there during the day.
Right.
Keep them low. But even like you could go just ambient and keep them within a small range, right?
Yeah.
And they don't get super hot, but they also don't get super cold.
Right.
But all mine heat up during the day, so I don't really care what they get down to at night, but 67 is the coldest I've even been able to ever get it.
Right.
But I've got stuff show up frozen too, almost, literally. And I leave them out and leave them at room temperature all day, like flying snakes. I had to shoot with a bunch of flying snakes, vine snakes, centipedes and stuff.
Right.
And they were really like stiff. And I left them just all day sitting on the counter. And then every single animal woke back up and was totally fine.
That's so insane.
Because they weren't long-term kept too cold, right?
I wonder if it has to do with, maybe as you guys were talking, I'm thinking about it, and maybe it has to do with the fact of how we kept pythons and say like that, I don't know, 10 years ago, 20 mm-hmm. years ago, to where you're sort of keeping in an Iraq type of environment, as minimalistic as can be. There's not really a place for the snake to hide. So like, I would think that if that snake is trying to conserve heat throughout the night, it's going to go into a hide or something and sort of like tight coil. And you know what I mean? So like, mm-hmm. to conserve mm-hmm. that heat. I wonder if that has to do with it. Cause I kind of would maybe be, they probably would still be okay, well, but you know, if I think they're sort of just sitting out in the in a tub, that
I think also it's a stress factor, you know. Yeah,
maybe that's
if
it.
The cage isn't getting in their ideal temperature and they're stressed to hell and you can never, they can't get warm enough, that's going to impact their immune system and that's going to be a problem. And you know what, you could probably have that go the other way if their cage is 98 degrees and they can't get away from it, they're going to get stressed out and, you know, possibly get sick and or cook, right. But it's that kind of stuff. So I think there's a lot of that, but it seems like almost perfect where you kept it in your house at room temperature, which was some kind of 60 degrees, and then it had a hot spot and it would just take care of itself in the tank or the giant ass enclosures.
Right, right.
Used to build it. It almost seems like
that's the 80s. We're kind of coming the 80s and 90s, right?
Yeah, we're kind of coming back to it.
Circling back.
Exactly. People want big ass enclosures where the animal can take care of itself and they want to see it do its thing. I've been watching this lizard run around behind Cody half the damn time.
Yeah.
He's just wandering around and I'm like, that is a dinosaur.
You see Owen in my head go like this.
Do this. Yeah. Yeah. He's over there now. Yeah. It's that kind of stuff. And that's why I think a lot of snakes are becoming more popular that are the ones like the Asian rat snakes, where it's like this animal wants to be at room temperature. It doesn't like it if you put it at the 90s.
Right.
So,
right. But pythons are so much cooler, though, Alan. Come on.
You don't have to fight. I don't
care.
It's not that hard of a fight, dude. Like, yeah.
So do you approach keeping the like when you're setting up your babies, is it you just keeping them in a tub, high box, that kind of stuff? Same thing?
Same. Yeah. Well, so those babies are huge. I have a baby room.
Uh-huh.
And the baby room is just heated.
Okay.
That room goes anywhere between 80 and 85.
That must be fun to clean.
Stuff in there. What's that?
That must be fun to clean.
Yeah. Honestly, the worst part is being in there force feeding baby Bahamas and Dominicans when you're standing there for 20 minutes with one snake. Like, that's when it's your sweat.
No.
Yeah, no, I keep them the same. They're just in a rack on cocoa husk.
Okay. Cool.
I'm going to be upgrading them. Well, any minute, just whenever I do it now, into the 3 foot tubs.
Okay.
Because they're huge babies.
I'm about to say they're probably like my olive python babies where they grow on oxygen and it's just like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And those Papuan babies, like. I think I did a video, actually. I did a little YouTube update on the baby Papuans, and I think I pulled out an olive.
Yeah, okay. I saw that. Yeah.
A few months older than the Papuan, and it's like
huge, man. Yeah, I think you had it, and it was like eyeing you up as you had it.
Yeah, first meal was a little too big. After the first meal, I went down to hoppers, but first meal was adult mice.
Adult mice.
Yeah.
Wow.
And not small adult mice.
Their skin is so to what you were saying earlier, like their scales are so like soft.
It's like fine olive python kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. They're really cool. did you have any problems getting them to eat?
No.
Okay.
No, they ate right away, like first try. And then I had a couple problems. Like I had two that ate no problem. And then they kind of would be up and down. And then I had one that I don't know, I ate a couple meals fine, and then I ended up eventually having to give it a live one. And then after I gave it a live, it just went back again, but I had to start at really small. And it's like a good buddy of mine now, and it's smashing mice, no problem now.
Okay. Hey, you know, the second you think that you have something figured out with these things, like of somebody always throws you a loop and you're like, why? Why are you doing that? Nothing's ever fine. Here's your live hopper. You go to hell. Like it's but yeah, that's awesome.
Very cool. So maybe we talk about how your approach to breeding them. Did you have a defined approach that you were going for, or was it sort of like
Was it like getting a reptile shop in a weekend where you were like, let's go, baby, let's figure it out.
Where did they fall into your breeding, you know, like since you started breeding? Like, are we talking like you've produced a bunch of clutches before this, or was this like your...
Like an human of other species?
Yeah. Just of what, like, what's your experience going into Poplin pythons?
You one of those guys that, like, this is your second pair of snakes that you bred? Because that's just annoying.
No, I mean, I've bred, I mean, everything really. Like,
okay,
all species of turtles, all kinds of frogs and axolotls, all kinds of lizards, colubrids, pythons, boas. So it wasn't all my dream ones are kind of what's getting new. Like this will be my first season. Things are looking very excellent on the white lip front.
Nice.
And the rings and all of that.
Northern, Southerns, both.
Both. Yeah.
Okay.
Both. Yeah.
All right. Nice. Sweet. Okay. All right.
So I kind of started to learn, like I used to always look for a recipe. And then that's kind of what I've learned over the last handful of years is it's just like, just make two seasons, be consistent with it every year, and let those snakes get accustomed to those two seasons without changing it. And then get the appropriate meals at the appropriate time, usually helps, to trigger an ovulation. If you once you get them to actually lock, if you can do that. But
yeah,
bred the whole Lyasis genus, like, well, for a couple of seasons leading up to that too, so it's all similar stuff. But
yeah,
I don't think they're that different.
And I like your idea of the instead of looking for a recipe, it's like take other people's recipes into account, but then kind of build your own, make your own.
Do you think that the fact that you've bred so many, like, okay, if you look at me, I'm like pythons, right? Where it's like with Owen, it's got colubrids and boas and pythons and this and that. With you, you're doing lizards and monitors and, you know, turtles, you're saying, and geckos and snakes. Does that help with you having a better understanding of breeding those other things?
I mean, in the big picture, I would say probably, because you learn overall, it's just about watching the day-to-day behavior.
Right.
You can watch an animal, whatever animal it is, doesn't matter what it is. Like, you know, you could have an animal that you've never even worked with before.
Right.
And if you can watch it every day for a year, like, it becomes quite obvious when something is up, something's different. So you go, okay, maybe this animal's acting different. You know, maybe the male is kind of pacing and has a different look to him. So I'm going to pair it. You know, like, you start to see the differences.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So maybe, but I think with those pythons, like even this year, I think I've really started to figure out the Indonesian pythons more than I previously did, because I'm learning that for me anyways, their season seems to be later to where I would be giving up and being like, oh, everything else is already laid eggs, you know, time to separate them.
But
I was separating too early previously. So maybe, but I think, pythons are pythons in their own lane, it seems.
Yeah, and I like the idea of that you take into account things that are different. Like, your female didn't come for your face, and it's like, that's different. Something's going on here. It's like right now, my proven pair of golds, white lips, they've been with each other, separated for feeding, nothing. They both are blue now at the same time. And that is what kind of triggered everything 2 years ago when I got the clutches. They both went blue, they both shed, and then she ovulated, and here we go. So it's like, all right, you got to see how that goes and kind of see how that plans out. So it's whenever something is different, I think by your experience, you take that stuff into it. You start paying attention to that shit where other people might be like, I had a good week. She didn't come to try to kill me. You're like, what's going on?
Yeah. Why not?
Why not? Yeah. So, and that's the same thing. Like, I have a carpet python that'll take my face off every time, except when she's gravid. Then it's like, I think she's like, I don't feel like coming at you with my whole body because there's other stuff going on. So she's now puppy dog tame and she hasn't been eating. So I'm like, I'm about 90% sure there are eggs in there. So
you bred your white lips?
Yeah, I got my golds 2 years ago.
Did you notice? I seem to have noticed it more with these Indonesian pythons, but do you notice around ovulation, did they get like a really dirty, greasy, waxy look? Especially on their eyes. Their eyes are dirty.
It almost looks like they got too dry and everything kind of got like all crust. Like almost like they got in the water and it dried on them. They looked
absolutely like the minerals dried on them?
Oh, yeah. They looked absolutely horrible. Oh, it looked like there was dry, flaky stuff all over them. And I'm just sitting there going like, I'm just – I don't like I'm here. Here's water. You have a giant pool. I don't understand. Why do you look like crap? And then she blew up like she swallowed a football. And what? And then that was the first lock. And then, of course, he didn't look great either. Like he looked like crap, too. And then the ovulated ton of locks. And then they were on the separate ends of the cages, pulled them apart. He went through a shed cycle and he went back to looking perfect, pristine. And it was like for that couple weeks they both looked like kind of like dry stuff on them. I don't know what the hell was going on with them or whatever, but
it's interesting. I've noticed it with a few things that the male Chilobothra stuff, like the Dominicans and the Bahamas and stuff, those males almost look waxy. What the hell is going on? But I noticed that Papuan, like around ovulation, she had like no iridescence. She just looked like she had like a dirty, waxy, gross.
Yeah.
Her eyes too. Like her eyes looked like they had something. The ring did that leading up to ovulation. One of the northerns is like that right now. She's just coming down. She'll be going to the shed. But the other white lips, I can't really see because they're in those tight boxes. So I can't. It's funny that yours did that too.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of, it's weird to kind of see that kind of stuff. Like right now, I have a blonde Madagascar hog that I'm pretty sure is gravid, and they do this thing where it almost seems like it's a sperm plug, like it's like a chrysalis, the crystal kind of thing in there. But then you can feel the eggs, and then you feel that thing, and she'll pass that, and then she'll lay the eggs. So she did that last time, and she looks kind of weird like that, and it's weird to see these kind of things, especially with different species, because those hognose are known for being completely blonde, but she's starting to develop black scales, like one or two or three black scales. And it's like, what the hell is this? Like, I don't, what's going on here? Is that trauma? Is that what? I don't know. So it's fun to see that. And then it's also fun to see on the other side with things like my bread lie looks absolutely massive right now, and she'll usually throw her weight around and be all kind of coiled up and showing that she's loose coiled and takes up all the thing. Now she's in a nice tight ball in the middle of the cage. The male's got the prime spot because he's doing whatever, and this is where she wants to be. So it's cool to watch those kind of observations.
Interesting. With breeding them, you were saying something about like feeding them at the right time. Are you doing cycle feeding? Is that sort of your approach with breeding them?
Yeah, usually what I'll do is I feed like throughout the summer and stuff. I'll feed like fairly typical. Like I'm a pretty sparing feeder. I'll be fairly typical, make sure that they're up to weight and everything. Leading up to pairing them, I'll feed the females pretty heavy.
Bigger meals or regular size meals or
both? More frequent. Sometimes more frequent, sometimes a big one.
Okay.
And then my thought there is to try and, you know, get them building follicles beforehand.
Right.
But then I pair them, and then sometimes doing that triggers them.
Yeah.
But if I'm getting locks and stuff, then that's when I start smashing my females. Cause I'll see, like, if you see a female kind of start building and swelling up a little bit after locking, I find, yeah, you smash them with a huge meal. And then quite often shortly after that, they're going into an ovulation.
Right. Yeah. And I think that was something I
did with carpets when they would be like, you know, there would be ones that I would be sitting on the fence and I'm like, are they grabbing? Are they not? It doesn't look like they're not acting the same way. And then boom, meal. And then they swell up. It's just, yeah. I wonder what's triggering that, you know?
I mean, I think also it helps with, if you have a female that's starting to build follicles and you're hitting her with more food, I think that's just going to help her out in the long run to have bigger follicles, maybe healthier eggs, healthier babies, and all that other stuff. So,
big time.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts with? So, we just talked to Dale DiNardo, who did some papers on Python incubation and eggs and all that. Mm-hmm. That'll actually be out before this one. But one of the papers that he wrote was, and this is it was actually Sumatran short-tail python, but he was saying that the presence of a male stimulated follicular growth in the female. And I'm wondering if that happens with Indonesian species as well. Like, I've never heard anybody sort of mention that. And I don't even know if people are even paying attention to it, but, you know, typically you would have your male in the same room as your female. So I would assume that they would, you know, you know, their presence is there, you know?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I would think, like, I always had the same, that's like one of my tactics. It's like, eat them heavy, cool them, put the male in there. One of those things is going to get them to.
Yeah. Something's going to happen. Yeah.
So I could see it. Definitely. Yeah. I've kind of also learned to, so many things have thrown me off on like when particular females become receptive. So if I see anything different, like I'll pair it any time of the year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And sometimes I've been surprised. That's like when I first bred Sabus too. I basically cohabbed them almost the entire year.
Really?
And then I got two clutches. Yeah.
No shit. Okay. Wow. Yeah, they go later, right? Much later?
Yeah.
Really good too. Okay.
Well,
like almost late summer, early fall, or no?
Yeah, mine were like spring, summer. But God, now looking at like these other ones I got going now, like all the white lips and stuff, like that southern female of mine, by June, I would have always separated them.
Right, same.
Yeah. And last year I got an ultrasound machine and Buddy was showing me. So we pulled her out and it was parted size, massive, like full egg size follicles. And that's southern.
Holy
and
it was shit. Yep.
And I was like,
well God damn it. Like I did the exact same thing. I got the ultrasound machine. I did all that stuff. And it was one of those Ryan Young. I would always base my shed off of him.
Yeah.
And he'd get eggs months before. And I'd be like, that's it. I've missed it. I've missed the window. Other people are getting eggs. I have failed. And I would stop. And when I got the white lips, he had eggs that had hatched and he had babies feeding before I got eggs.
Yeah.
So you can't base what you do off other people. You got to pay attention to the animals. So
feel it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really believe though, a lot of like your outside weather plays a part
in
more so than we think, you know, because the reason that Ryan could be getting them earlier is that he gets those crazy winters.
All I mean, snows, not that,
you know what I mean? Like maybe his, I don't know. Just
the way that he's has, It's the way that he has his room, and yeah. it's also his individual animals.
So he was telling me that he has nailed like the Indonesian stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But he feels that when you get the Indonesian stuff going, his Australian stuff starts to, not that it won't breed, but it's not as consistent. And he's like, yeah. he's feeling that, you know, maybe it's because he's so like, it's a different time. Maybe. I don't know.
I know my Aussie stuff.
Yeah.
Would always have already laid eggs by the time mm-hmm. Indo stuff was ovulating. Mm.
I kind of found like with me, because I have so many things across the board, the breeding season starts and it's carpets, and then it's like Aussie carpet stuff, and then Indo stuff gets jammed in here, and then you have North American crap and Asian colubrids, and then you're at the end and you're like,
we're basically fine. It's all year.
It's 2 months that it's not breeding season. Right?
Looks like we're finally done with the last clutch of bread life fucking rough scales. It's like, well, now I don't know what the hell's going on. So, yeah, I feel like it's trying to nail down a season. It's like we keep thinking that the season is these couple months, and I think we need to bump it back out by like a month or two in each direction.
So. Well, I think what you guys both said early on is like looking for those differences.
Makes
a huge... You know, again, it's going back to that student of the serpent type of thing. If you're paying attention, your snakes are going to tell you. Like, mm-hmm. I think too, Cody, you bring up an awesome point that I love. It's just like being consistent with whatever your approach is going to be, you know, and doing that for many years.
Yeah.
Pick it and stick with it. So as far as like, I imagine egg incubation for the Papuans and some of the other stuff that you had, like, I think you mentioned rings too. We're talking same kind of incubation across the board.
For me, I do everything the same. Like I do it all on perlite, just like soaking wet perlite with the lighting diffuser on top.
Mm-hmm.
So the eggs aren't touching it. Uh-huh. And then I've slowly like decreased it a little bit. Like I think my incubator is 87.4.
Okay.
And then that's, yeah, the Papuans were the longest yet. Like Papuans were 90 days, whereas Jesus. My olives are like 85. Okay. All the lasses for me besides the olives are like 2 months.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
90 days, damn.
Yeah, that's getting monitor range is what we're getting. No, no, not at all. But
I wish, yeah.
Monitors are like,
we'll see you next year.
Days, right? Yeah.
These guys are 200.
200? Oh,
hell.
Holy shit. Yeah.
Wow.
Couldn't you have, if you had eggs from your monitors and you put them in the incubator, you could potentially, how many more times is she going to lay before that clutch hatches?
Oh, you usually have like three clutches going.
See, like as an old, they don't stop making themselves.
No.
Oh my God.
It starts, man. And the dwarfs are like every month they'll go.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But Indicus complex. And now I'm finding the tree monitors are every 3 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just on a side note, have you bred them tree monitors?
Ask me that in a month. Okay. I had a bad run with them, like trying to put a group together. But now I've gotten two infertile clutches.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And now I've got my timing on point. And I actually put on my Instagram story last night, I had green trees locked up.
Okay.
That girl, now that I've got her cycle figured out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should be good this time around. Before the male was, because I'm rotating one male between
multiple. Right. Okay. All right.
And the timing was off. So I think this time, this will be the one. I hope.
Gotcha.
Okay. Cool.
Fingers crossed for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you produce the ring pythons that you got, or was that?
No. So this is the first. I got these ones. I got them like last summer.
All right.
Yeah, they were They were one of the final species on the dream list.
On the dream list. I'd say, have you added more species to the dream list now that you've kind of gotten most of them? Like, have you penciled some new one in? Oh, and pelipythons or
Cropani.
Okay.
It's been pretty much the same.
Okay.
Cuban boas, I didn't think I would ever get the opportunity to get here. But I ended up, oddly enough, getting some. But, for me, really what's left on that list would be bolens.
And then
just morphs, like albino olives, albino white lips. Gotcha. Other than that's pretty well it that's left.
I like how you're like, I'm going to breed them first and then I'll jump into the albino white lip. I'm not. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, you got to get the money from somewhere.
Yeah. But say, you gotta, it's easier that way. Yeah.
I bought albino olives out of the U.S. like, God, like 8 or 9 years ago. But I wasn't able to get them into Canada. So luckily, Buddy was very kind and sent me my money back.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. That would suck.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it because it was Australian species, albino?
Yeah.
Or
yeah. Really? Wow.
So I got to get them from Europe. But to be honest, my end goal is to relocate to the U.S. anyway, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Pennsylvania's nice, you know. Yeah. Where we are. If you want to come, open a shop.
Go out west, you'll be all right.
Give us a job. Yeah, I mean, don't go out west. They got enough.
No, I mean, what, like West Pennsylvania.
West Pennsylvania, there you go. Yeah.
Lots of land.
You know? Yeah.
Perfect.
Oh, that's cool. All right, so... what else? Papuan pythons that I'm trying to think of as far as like
the thing is, I see them a lot is that people are like, it's 13 feet and it's eating rats. So like, do you have them kind of on the slimmer side? Do you recommend larger meals? Because, you know, they seem to be like one of those pythons. And I see this with Australian olives a lot. Is people get it big and then like, and I feed it bunnies. It's like, congratulations, you broke it. It's now a fat olive python and it's going to sit there and it will be an impressive 13, 14 foot slug that lays there. Like, do you keep them on the slimmer side or are they just...
All my stuff is very lean. Yeah. Okay. Even my monitors. But mine might look different at different times of the year.
Okay.
Going into winter is the biggest you'll see. My females are a little bit thicker than you would typically see them for the rest of the year.
Okay.
So I don't keep mine really at a consistent size. Coming into breeding, they'll be thick.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't do the...
Is it like rats, guinea pigs,
rats. Whatever?
Rats, okay.
Yeah, something like a pop. Well, I had a couple huge Papuan females, and I was originally trying to trigger them by feeding them rabbits.
Okay.
But I just, I mean, it didn't work. So I pretty much just do rats, and then say if I'm trying to like push something to ovulate, maybe I'll give it 3 rats or something.
Yeah, I find that easier than, and also less expensive than like shoving 5-pound rabbits at it. It's like, it just feed it 2 more and then it'll just.
Yeah, and it's not as harsh on their body. I mean, a big rabbit, you know what I mean? Those suckers are stretched out.
Yeah, that was, I'm still on the fence of whether that is partially what got my female white lip to trigger and ovulate is because I ran out of medium rats and I gave her a large. Yeah. And I'm like, well, and she, it was huge. And then after that is when she kind of looked all ratty and then she got big again. And I'm like, you should have digested that by now. Like, why is that? And then the male was all over her. So could be something. I think it's one of those things where there's 10 million ways to trigger these kind of things. And who's to know which one finally did it? You know, there could have been 1, 2, 3, who knows? So.
No, I think, it's just an open, you got to come up with a method, but it's not a particular recipe. Like,
Right.
You could breed things just doing ambient temperature and not doing any temperature cycling at all. Mm-hmm. Or you could breed things doing extreme nighttime drops or.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just sees how it works. And then you just kind of key in with that.
yeah, my theory is it's always like there's multiple things that can get that, you know, them to go for a female to ovulate. It's just being consistent with whatever that thing you pick, you know, because you'll hear some people, they'll say, oh, I do a light cycle. Some people say I do a temperature cycle. Some people do a feed cycle. Some people don't do any cycle, or they don't think they're doing a cycle, or their room drops down at night, you know, like it's all those kind of things. But it's like Keith says, right? The rhythm of the room.
Yeah.
What do you think? Well, with you wanting to get Bolan's pythons, what do you think the struggle is with that species in particular, getting them to go breeding wise? Because you bred the Bop ones, and they're one of those ones that people
they're a hard one. Yeah.
You know? Do you have a theory? Do you have like? Do you think about?
You have what an you're approach? Do?
Is there an approach or?
My approach would be just to trust my process and watch them closely. Right. I don't think they're much different, to be honest. I think in general, they're probably kept too warm. Mm-hmm. And then maybe people try and go too extreme on the cooling. Like, mm-hmm. I think in general, just shrink your scale, you know? You might just keep them cooler across the board. And then I have a hunch it's just typical Python stuff, you know? But there's so much pressure to breed things, right? And you'll and then you'll be like, oh, that guy on that podcast does this. So immediately you go downstairs and
just wreck everything.
You tweak it.
Yeah. So I think if you have established animals and you come up with a routine and watch the animal, that would be my approach. I would just be keeping them cooler and doing typical Python things and watching them through time of the year.
Right. So what it seems to have sort of, maybe this is true, maybe it's not true, but it just seems to me that a lot of people are approaching like breeding like scrubs. I know Nick does this with olive pythons. Oh, and I think you do the same thing with that extra male presence. Yeah. Sometimes.
Yeah, but now I'm being held hostage by a boy that doesn't breed, and I'm not sure if I can get rid of him or not. And it's like, well,
so what do you think? That's a thing. What do you guys like? I don't know. You both bred olive pythons. Do you, Cody? Do you?
Well,
do
Cody, anything? How many do you have? How many Australian olives do you have
now? Just four.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fails
2.2.
Right. Yeah.
I used to have 3.3 or 2.3. Sorry. Okay. But I had a random egg binding issue.
Yeah.
Bummer.
But I've never, with pythons, I've never used two males.
No.
Okay. I would be scared with my olives.
Yeah, I will say, like, quickly, let me put this into perspective. I have never put two male olive pythons in the same goddamn cage, okay?
Okay.
Like, that is not.
You're not doing carpet combat?
Like, I think it's a quick way to turn an olive python into a freaking blender. Like, no, I'm not doing that. Like, it's no. But I have pissed off one male with the presence of the other. Like, let one boy through the cage, pull him out, put the breeder in, or thrown the other male's shed into the other male's cage. But I will also say that I have never gotten both males to breed the same year. I only have one proven male.
Right.
The other male, I've put him in with girls that have not been with the other boy, and he just doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
I wonder how much that factor plays into it of those other males being in the room.
I don't know, because that's the thing. I would love to go down to 1.1 olive pythons, because I have my breeder male, and then I have two girls, which are both fantastic and both have produced for me. But, you know, and I like having the idea of swapping back and forth, but I have way too many interests. And one of the interests is Papuan pythons. And it's like, you'll be great. Get a pair of Papuan pythons and I'll have a pair of olive pythons. And there you go. Male Papuan, female Papuan, male Aussie. Yeah, that whole thing. But I don't want to do that and get rid of my pair and then never be able to produce
breed olives again.
Yeah, I'm terrified of that. So I think in a couple of years, what I'll do is I'll take the one pair and I'll send them on breed loan. And if things start getting screwy, I'll grab them back. I'll go get him. Like, you know. But I don't know. I've never actually seen any kind of a thing other than like normal Python stuff that you would do to piss off a boy. Cody, have you seen anything that might kind of point that you need to have an extra male with olive pythons?
Not for me, because I've never had, like, I've only used this one male mm-hmm. and he's bred every single year since 2012.
Okay. So kind of the same thing.
Yeah, my other male I've raised up, and next year will be his first year.
Okay.
But I've never... No, yeah.
I'm kind of curious if you could possibly get... I mean, somebody has to have done it where you have multiple pairs of olive pythons that go in the same year. From what I keep hearing from people is they have multiple males, but one male is usually what goes per year, maybe to multiple females,
yeah.
but they don't have multiple pairs going. So I don't know if it's like this is the dominant male of this area or if it's
really interesting, because I've had it, I know with, I may have had it with Maclots. I've definitely had it with Sabus.
Okay.
Like this been here, different males, different females.
That's what I would. I mean, I've had that with carpets where it's like, this is one pair, right underneath is another pair, and there are eggs coming in stacks and all the other stuff. But the olive pythons, it's like wherever that one breeder male was, that was the female that was going that year.
So here's a question for you guys. Do you notice, so like when Morelia, for example, start to go into the breeding season, you see the males sort of cruise in the cage. Are you seeing that with the olives? And did you see that with the poplins as well?
Yes, with the olive. The poplins, I'm not entirely sure, actually.
He was with the other female at the time.
Yeah, early I had him with the other female. So yeah.
Okay.
He would already be moving.
Yeah, he doesn't need to cruise. She's right over there.
Like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
She's here. I don't need to go looking. Yeah.
Yeah, he's hiding, if anything.
Yeah.
But I haven't noticed with them. But I tell you one thing that I notice every year is I have a lone male Madagascar ground boa.
Okay.
And every year when those female doomerals are going –
oh,
sucker paces so much to the point where his cage will get like staticky and he'll like his belly scales, all the substrate pushes to the back and he just,
yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like it almost makes you want to breed him to
just to get him to relax.
Just to let him
chill out.
Yeah.
I noticed strongly with him. Yeah,
that happens with everything. Right,
that's
now,
that's the Madagascar boa that I was talking about. Oh, and the ground boa, they are freaking beautiful.
They're phenomenal.
Oh my god, they're so nice. Wow, that's cool that you have that.
I noticed pacing in males of all things. Right now, I have a California king snake that's wrecking his cage because the females were right underneath him. I bought them as an adult pair, and she needs another year to recoup, in my opinion. But he wants in there right now. He is like mulch is just getting thrown around that cage, and he's just going to have to live with it. So
I notice that with boas a lot too. Yeah. I know boas do that.
Yeah, roughies normally do it. I don't think anything's going to happen back there with these guys this year. The male was in with the female. She's off food. She got big. And now he doesn't give a damn about anything. And he ate yesterday. So it's like, I'm pretty sure he's like, that's it. I'm done. Give me my food. I'm good. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. But he did not pace like he there was a couple times where Eric and I would be doing the show and he'd be up against the glass like doing this behind my head. Like we're just waiting him for to do stuff. But it's weird. It's like some years they're on it. Some years they just don't care. So,
OK.
Yeah.
Very cool. I don't know, Owen, if you had any other questions as far as poplins go.
No, I need to stop thinking about them.
Okay. I wanted to talk about
really interesting about her.
Yeah.
Is her. I have a note card that I brought with me, but it's over there. I forgot to bring it.
Okay.
But she, every day, I temp gun her body and the floor.
Yeah.
Where she was. And she was always almost 5 degrees warmer than the surface she was on.
Really?
And she always kept her, on average, she kept her body temperature between 83 and 85.
So with these guys, I know you said you do basking light. So
at the time I wasn't with the poplins.
Okay. So at the time you weren't. Now, did you notice any kind of color change with them? Because I know they kind of go from like insanely dark to kind of like that light green kind of a thing.
I notice with all mine, it's almost like individual looks. It's okay. Like some of mine are just light green most of the time, and other ones are kind of ugly. Like, but not ugly, but but that female during the receptive, like the whole reproductive stage, she was a really dark olive color. She didn't get that bright green. She didn't get the light flanks. Like, she was just dark the whole time.
I wonder if that's a thing to kind of just suck in as much warmth as possible and hang on to it if she needed it.
Yeah, and she didn't bask much at all till the very end.
Really?
She had an 86-degree basking spot.
Okay.
And towards, like, the last 2 weeks, she basked. But before that, she was on in an 8-foot cage. She was on the cold side, with like 80.
That was another thing that was brought up. I hope I get this right, Owen, right? That Mel was talking about with females looking for heat when they're building follicles, follicular growth and all, which was, I don't know. I always thought the opposite, I guess because of the ball python idea that they wrap their water bowls when they're, you know what I mean? When they start breeding. I don't know if you've heard that or whatever.
One thing I noticed this year, actually, since you mentioned that. The ring female and the ring female and this one northern pair. I should mention they're both right on top of each other.
Okay.
In front of a stairwell. It's the coolest part of the basement. And then I have my white lips set up in three different styles.
Okay.
Set up. But the ring and the northern, that they're literally a day apart from when they started locking. And the ring was in the water all the time leading up to ovulation.
Okay.
Really?
And the white lip was wrapped around her water bowl like I used to have a room with, you know, like 100-150 ball pythons. And yeah, same thing. You'd open and all the females would be wrapped around the water bowl. This white lip was just like that. Same with my other northern female too. In the corner of the cage, she's never in, wrapped around the water bowl.
Interesting.
I think they just need it. I think it just depends on what they need at the time, whether it's if they feel like it's getting too hot, maybe they grip the water bowl just to kind of cool it down. And
yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it's a matter of their
they want a certain temperature. Yeah.
You know, like in, it's warming up, but then they're trying to keep. You know,
what he said. I know that what he said was that you got to think of the eggs almost like a rotisserie chicken. So she's like constantly moving them around.
Yeah, that's because we were like talking about why.
Right. It's like she's like she'll be this. She'll flip over. It's because she's trying to. She wants them to be a certain temperature, and she has a bunch of different ways to make that temperature the way she wants it. Whether she's on the heat, toiled up tight, basking belly up, wrapping the water bowl. So yeah, I would imagine if it got too hot, she's like, cool it down. And then she's like, oh, it's so yeah, I who knows that entire process.
So she started basking like a week before she laid
curling up the water bowl.
I think it was 2 weeks.
Okay. 2 weeks? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
How many eggs did you get from the pop one?
Let me grab this little note card.
Yep. the joys of snake breeding.
Yeah.
It's just
it's like I can't remember, but I
can't remember shit. I take pictures and put them on my Instagram so that when people are like, "When was it born?" I'll go like go through it and be like, "Then that's when it was. That's when I see it coming out of the egg." Yeah.
So let me check my Instagram.
Yeah, just slide here. Yeah. How many eggs did you get out of the Papa one?
One slug, seven eggs. One egg died like a week before they hatched. And I cut it open. There was a fully formed baby.
That is a
dick. It was a boob egg, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Those are weird. I've had the weirdest eggs go the distance.
Yeah, I like when they have the window and you can see.
Like barely shelled. Yeah, and like I can see the baby. There it is. Like it's right there.
Right.
So blue, cool side.
Did you track her entire movement throughout the entire thing?
Dude, it was almost every day.
Oh my god, you're somebody after Eric's own heart. I'd be like snake in box.
Dude, it's like 27 on cool side, body temperature 78.9, floor temperature 76.9, deep in blue.
This is the kind of shit that people like people need to contact you when they're getting ready to do like breeding journals and stuff like that, because if they were to contact me, I'd be like, I don't know, the male was in there and then the eggs appeared. Like, I don't
Oh, when you write notes, come on.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I refuse to
You just play a non-note taker on a podcast, that's all.
That is true. I don't let, yeah.
Yeah, the week of laying, she was mainly on the hot side.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but she laid on the cool side.
Really? Interesting.
That's so weird.
And I had the eggs ranged from 155 to 165 grams.
Holy wow. shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
God damn.
Yeah, it's a big bin. Yeah. It's a big egg box.
Like a CB70 egg box.
It's like your typical baby tub, right?
Yeah.
Box soap. And the eggs down near touch DJ.
Took the whole side?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
They have this much space between. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Good enough.
God, what was when they pipped that 90 days? Did they stay in the egg for a while? Did they come right out? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I did like a little YouTube video pulling the babies.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was so long. Like I was like, okay, it's been like a week. These things have been hatching. So I'm just going to show you these ones because I got it. Because one bin, they're side by side.
Mm. Right.
But one bin hatched before the other one. The other one took forever. Like there was a few babies that just hung out in there and they pipped over like a week. It was very
okay.
Yeah.
That's was there so anything cool. else interesting or any observations you had as far as the eggs go? Like, did you have to do anything as far as like as you got to the end where the moisture air picked change, up in the incubator and the or in the egg box and you have all that condensation? Did you have anything?
No. Like that? No? So the incubator that I'm using now is it really breathes that sucker.
Like, okay.
There's fans all along the top. Are you guys familiar with Cornell's World?
No.
No.
It's a PVC company
okay.
In Canada here, but I know a lot of big guys out there use them too. But anyway, it's a big PVC incubator with sliding glass doors. Ooh. So you already got the gap in the sliding glass. Mm-hmm. And then there's computer fans along the top and the back.
Nice.
Blowing down. And it's 4 foot by 4 foot. So it breathes really well. Mm-hmm. And then I had a hole the size of like the small hole punch, you know,
okay,
tub. So even though they were massive eggs,
a lot of air, yeah,
condensation or anything, yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool. I don't know. I was just thinking like sometimes I struggle with that with which is probably airflow type of thing, but you know, with carpet eggs where I would have to put like a dowel rod on the back of it so it sort of slanted it up so when the moisture would kind of just drip down. I'm thinking if the egg is bigger, holy shit.
I mean, dude, I think my olive eggs go into a, like, I have all the little 5 and 6 quart bins for everything else, the carpet eggs and stuff. And then there's like the big 15 quart one for the olive eggs. Like, basically that just bigger. Like, yeah. So
I also separate mine a fair bit too.
There you go.
Like, I have like maybe like 4 eggs in a box.
Oh,
like, a bunch of boxes. Yeah.
Oh, I've gotten 20 carpet eggs into a 6 quart. It'll be fine.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Get some condensation.
just jam those things in there. They'll all
that could be it too. Yeah. 100%.
It's okay. I think partially it all goes back to what we were kind of taught when we first got into it. So it was that like you must try to keep as much heat in as possible. So I think that is something that we have put forward into our egg boxes where it's like 3 holes or 2 holes are fine. Where it's like the ones that do really well is like the thing looks like Swiss cheese and airflow is great. Like my incubator is a Coca-Cola refrigerator that I gutted, but I kept the electronics working. So it has a giant fan in the top supposed to that clicks on when the heat turns on and just changes the air over all the time. So that fan will kick on maybe 6 times a day, depending on what the temperature is in there. Right. And
do your guys' eggs stay tight or are they ever a little dimpled?
No, I mean, when you get close, they all like,
they dimple down.
Everybody dimples, but everybody stays tight. It's funny because looking at other species, like python eggs, it's tight, starts to dimple, you're getting closer, baby.
Yeah.
False water cobra, It's tight, baby. It's like, wait.
Falsies just explode out of there.
Yeah, it just and then there's fluid everywhere. And then it's angry, and then it's knocking over the eggs where its siblings are in, and it's just wet everywhere. And it's just, God, it was horrible. Like, it was just, but yeah, that was them and my mangrove monitors. When I hatched mangrove monitors, that the problem with that is when you're dealing with lizards, it's like you expect, and you know, I've only ever bred snakes and then one type of lizard. Is snake has one sharp object and it goes one direction. It's sliced that way. The monitor is like sliced. Now I'm going to use my hands. And then now the egg is just shredded and the lizard's just like, and I'm out. And it's gone. It went, it zigged when I should have zagged. And yeah, eventually I got them all. So it's fine. But it's just something totally different. Like hatching all that different stuff. It's cool.
Yeah, 100%. Sure. Okay. Poplins, man. They're such a
cool snake. Are you trying to get me poplins? Like, what is up with this?
Because if I know, if
like, are you still trying to live vicariously through me? Yeah. I know what you're doing. I 100%. See what you're doing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, they are cool.
It'll come back to you.
Yeah.
What about setting up, imports? What has been your experience with that? Getting them established and dialed in and, you know.
Less is more.
Okay.
What I do, any wild stuff I get in, I always unpack it. Like, I just cover the whole floor with blank white newsprint and then spray with Prevenamite. And then I unpack it on there.
Right.
Garbage can.
Burn the box. Right. Yep. Got it. Okay. Yeah.
But I, first thing I do is I put everything in water, just soaking up the water. And then I leave them in there for a couple hours. And then I add Dawn dish soap, sloshed around. And then I, most of the time I leave them overnight. And then from there I'll get a good gauge of what the mite situation is, or it doesn't seem to do anything for ticks. However, sometimes the skin will almost swell up a little bit where the tick is under the scale, so you'll be able to see that there's
one. You can see it now, yeah.
Right.
So I do them like that, and then from there they go into isolation just in tubs on paper towel. The paper towel is sprayed with Prevenamite. And it's just in a room. Nobody's allowed to see my collection or anything anyway. Like, in general, my personal animals don't see anything other than
Right.
But the quarantine room, yeah, like, that stuff I keep it. They don't see the dog. They don't see nothing. And I just, smaller cage too. Always a small cage, even with monitors, anything. Real small cage.
Right.
And I just leave them in peace, really. I bother them as little as possible.
Yeah.
Keep them well hydrated. And then, I mean, that's it, really. The Prevenamite is what I've found to be the best treatment for the mites. If you do it properly, you know what I mean?
Right.
If you
don't do
it, then it doesn't kill the mite.
Don't just spray it directly in the face of the animal.
Yeah.
It's better.
Don't do that.
No, it isn't. Yeah.
No, I do that, and then I don't worry about anything internal for a long time.
Right.
Right.
Literally months down the road.
I mean, that's obvious. And then, like, but if you open the drawer and it took a shit and the shit is crawling away from you, then obviously you will deal with it. Like,
yeah, you got to do something.
Okay, I see that. Thank you. Like, but I think that's the point of the minimalistic setup. Like, and I think that's where people
it's easier to monitor,
miss that. Yeah. Exactly. You know, you have it on plain white paper towel because if something pops up, you can see it. It's
you're gonna know.
Right.
If you see pepper in the bottom of your enclosure, you
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's the people who are like, I will take it and I shall put it in my fully planted aquarium. It's like, Jesus Christ. Like, I don't.
You see how they're arboreals all the time.
Oh my. Like, like, you're going to drive yourself nuts because you're not going to see anything and it's just going to fall off the stick.
Yeah.
There it goes. Yeah. So.
No, I go, just a lot of privacy. I bother them as little as possible. The ticks, the Prevenamite seems to handle any ticks that are hidden under the scales. Like, you give it a week or so.
Yeah.
and almost like the tick dies, but then the dead tick causes almost like a little bit of like swelling and blistering where the dead tick is under the skin.
Yeah.
And then you can push it out and clean that up. But yeah, anything internal, I don't worry about it. If I don't have to, I don't worry about it for a long time to let animals comfortable eating and not just going to crash, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like you don't want to hit it too hard. Right when it comes in, you want to hit it hard enough so that all the stuff gets dealt with, but you don't want to beat it. Like it's just like you don't want to crack it over.
Yeah. They just seem to plummet. Like
I mean, especially do you do imports of? You said you import like monitors and stuff like that. Are we talking like baby monitors and things like that too?
Yeah. So the way that I. And I'm not the importer. Like,
okay, yeah,
I'm piggybacked on. I'm not the guy doing the work. But if it's, I never see anything that I like to work with. Mm. I never can seem to bring in for resale. If it doesn't go. So anytime I'm getting imports and stuff, monitors and all of that, it all is for me personally.
Right. Right.
And then I'll breed them and sell the babies.
Right. But,
and then a lot of the wholesalers too, right? Like a lot of them are getting in fresh wild caught and then it's on the list the next day. And then, and you might as well be getting it fresh, right? You still got to deal with all the crap.
There are a couple times where I've seen an animal or purchased an animal or had interactions with an animal where I'm like, you are in the same cup that you've been in
for,
and I don't like this. Like
there's like a little water bowl in there.
You see the indent where the water bowl was, and they pulled it out where they put it on the table, and it's just like I'm not okay with this. Like I don't know. So there's a lot of that, and I think obviously if you work with some of the harder to breed species, you need to know how to establish a potential wild caught because. That's going to come across your desk because either you're going to track down the two or three people that managed to breed it and spend the money to get the calf to born bred, or you're going to take a chance on a wild caught, and that's happened.
Yeah, I find it's often not what people expect. Like what it takes to establish them is not. It's the opposite of what they would expect.
Oh yeah, it's, and that's why people are like. People came up to me when I had the white lips for sale and they're like, well, it's like three times what the wild caught one is. I'm like, because their mother's wild caught. I established her. Like you are paying for that too. Like it was, I did all that. So it's part of it. You need to take that into consideration. If you can't handle that, then ball pythons and bearded dragons are fantastic species that you can totally keep very easily. Like,
they're affordable.
Leopard geckos.
Leopard geckos.
Just the leopard geckos.
Well, I know you do green trees too, right? Real into green trees. Okay.
Green tree pythons, green tree monitors. I don't know with you. Is it all over? It's both.
Actually, yeah.
Yes. It's like, okay.
I'm really trying to grow a large group of arboreals.
anything up high. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm kind of into that. I think arboreal snakes is kind of my thing. I think I'm with you there. You slowly learn that over. So it's like just their body structure, I suppose, is kind of like what I like, you know. But if I was reading that book, West Indian Boas, right? And I'm looking through it and I'm like, man, they really look like the carpet pythons of, you know, of over
there.
In our neck of the woods, you know? It's just like they have the same head structure almost, and like, you know, same kind of patterns in a lot of what I've seen. It was very, very cool. Very underrated group of snakes, probably because you can't really sell them.
Yeah.
You just have to give them away. Back to green trees. Sorry.
Yeah, but say, is there a specific locale species, or are we doing designer green tree pythons?
No, I've got sarongs, BX, a yellow Aru, oddly enough. I've only got one like designer or mix, whatever you want to. But I got no preference really. Like right now I'm breeding that yellow Aru to an all blue sarong. So,
oh.
Yeah. And then okay. I some of her babies that were, yeah. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
What the hell?
Right? Me and Owen have a thing for yellow chondros.
So. I don't know why. It's just kind of in there. Yeah.
And that's a pure Aru.
Wow. That's crazy.
Weird. Yeah.
I kind of like that there's there's lighter scales on her. Yeah,
all too. The white speckling is just like a lighter yellow.
Yeah, I kind of like that. Like, it's like she, like, people are like, she's solid yellow. I don't want solid yellow. I want some contrast. I like that. I like that it's subtle. Like, it's cool.
That's a pretty snake.
I mean, the blue one's gorgeous, too. I mean, damn.
Yeah, everybody's like, are you going to have any green trees available?
Yeah. I don't know.
Foreseeable future.
You're hoarding them, right?
Contact me in a year when they've all changed color. Then I might. I don't know. It's just.
Oh, that's the thing with them, yeah. Like, I have some babies from that blue one, and they're like, one of them changed. Well, I turned like almost black at 4 months old. And now it's like lightened to green.
Okay.
And I've got another one that's like in between. Like, oh, they changed like almost black, but this one's like black and green. And then one of the babies is just getting lighter yellow. And then all the brown markings are like lavender now.
Just make a damn decision. Like, tell me where you're going. Like, yeah, help me.
It's cool, but.
I mean, it's. Got to be fun to watch. I mean, I enjoy that crap out of my carpet pythons, and I'm like, I already know what you're going to look like. I've seen your parents. I bred your grandparents, but I'm just going to watch you. There it is. That's what I was looking for. Good job. Hold back. Like, that's all I want.
Like, excitement. Yeah.
Yeah. Just be what I wanted you to be. So
are green trees hard to come by up in Canada?
Well, I mean,
good ones.
I mean, out here I can think of two guys that you would track down to buy, or three, Don. Okay. That you would track down to buy a captive bred green tree from.
Okay.
And the rest is just like, and that's a weird habit. Like, I guess prior to COVID, there was a lot more imports, and like you could buy wild caught import green trees out here for, you know, whatever. They were usually around $700.
Okay.
And all of a sudden they're all like, you know, wild caught BIAC, $1,500.
Jesus.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Everything out here all of a sudden took a shift where all the wild caught stuff is selling like the same price as a captive.
That kind of happened.
Really?
That kind of happened here, because I know Timor pythons went from like 15 to like, oh, they went from like 700 to 15 to 25, and now they're back down to 15, and it's
is that a species you want to get, Timor pythons?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
You're one of my favorites. Well, and I
had a relationship.
Yeah,
I had a female that I didn't even know it was possible for them to get that big.
Oh, yeah, they can get huge.
Oh, yeah. And she, I lost her. She got egg bound. And then I had another female that I raised up that was actually a sibling to the ones that Dawn produced from.
Uh-huh, right.
She was a sibling to them. And she developed a big mass on her trachea. And I brought her in, and they said it was like a risky procedure. And so they removed it. And I was like, okay, she's recovering great. It's wonderful. And then a month later, she was just dead. And I had two males, and I'm really hoping Dawn produces again.
Yeah, there needs to be more of them in this world.
They're phenomenal.
I'm nervous. That's next year. That's next year's big thing.
When you were breeding them, I mean, obviously, I know you're saying she got egg-bound or whatever, but is...
Was it...
within the same window as the rest of your Indonesian stuff, or were they different? Or
they were closer to my Australian stuff, I guess. It was mid to Yeah, like mid to late winter.
Okay.
Not so much spring. And then, yeah, both pairs, like, getting them to breed was no problem. They were like blackheads. You put them in there, and they just lock right up.
Right. What are you doing wrong, Owen?
For right now, it's because they've never seen each other. My male and female are separate.
Oh, so your what rule I'm doing wrong one.
Is they're in separate cages, asshole.
Right. Well, you're failing me.
I'm in there.
I don't know. I was watching something on. I was watching something online the other day where there's these things now that they're dust covers for, like, dryers. It's like a black square hole and a door. And all I can think about is, holy crap, like, I'm about to up my shift door game. Like, it's about to be so much better. Like, so I don't know, because their cages are back to back. And I kind of want to put a shift door in there because then I can open it up and they'll have like this 8-foot U-shaped cage to enjoy. Yeah. So, right. Yeah.
Okay.
The wheels are spinning. I'll get it. Don't you?
Oh, that's what. Where was that posted? And I saw you were like,
I put it on my Instagram. Oh,
you put it up.
Yeah, I threw it on.
I saw it somewhere. I was like,
it was Sim Container put it up on there because they were putting it in there for lizards. And I'm like, holy shit, because they come in like 4-inch, 6-inch. I'm like, god damn. Like, okay. Yep. So yeah, that's
okay.
I'm working. Don't worry. I'm always working.
I know you are.
Listen, Diamond Boy. Like, you know, you can come here talk about my Timors. You know. Anyway.
Yeah. Ouch. He took that personal, Cody. I don't know. It's like I hit a nerve there or something. Jeez. I didn't know you were so sensitive about Timor.
Big them and Maclots pythons pissing me off.
Well, I understand the Maclots. You've bred Maclots, right, Cody?
I got a actually tonight or tomorrow I should have a clutch laid.
See, he's like, easy. I did it like 5 times. I don't know what's wrong with Owen. Yeah.
Keep dreaming about your little doors, Owen. My big boys breed snakes.
Throw it in there.
Move out of the way. Yeah. Okay.
Let's talk about your season this year. Like, what's your exciting pairings?
And most anticipated,
This was a weird season for me. I was like, this season is either going to be bomb in one direction. It's going to be a horrible bomb season I'll be a happy camper. But I usually try and, like, I usually pick, like, whatever 5 species or something that I'm focused on.
Okay.
So this year, I didn't do much for boas this year. The only boas I really paired up this year was I got a Grava Tiger Amazon. And then I paired up a couple pairs of Bahama boas.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're cool. Not cooperating this year. Like, previously, they just, like, March, they were on it instantly, and it doesn't seem to be the case this year. I'm waiting right now on that one green tree. I'm hoping she's about to ovulate. She ovulated in May last time.
Okay.
So I'm trying to push that right now with the food. Been breeding like crazy. I had the ring python. She's in prelay shed.
That's awesome.
I have a northern white lip that I think just had a prelay shed, and the other one is just coming down from ovulation, so she should be going in the shed. And then I have the southern white lips that I'm more confident this time around.
Okay.
I'm going to leave them, you know, till June for sure, because that's by June. I couldn't even say, but I'm pretty sure there were 40 millimeter follicles, like those suckers, like eggs, you know?
Right, yeah.
Too late. But this time, her in the male, she's a psychopath. Like, she's as big as my olives, like. And she, I can't look, because if they see me, one will strike, and then the other one will grab that one, and they just wrap each other. There's 2 hide boxes, right? And I just, like, will crack it and, like, lift a hide box to see if they're, and they both move back and forth and stay in the same hide.
You're, like, crawling across the floor, like,
just trying to be
just, yeah, because they're, like, so I'm hoping they go. And then I have olives in the incubator.
Oh, nice. Okay.
That Mac is about to lay. I got 2-3 pairs of Sabus that the females are looking big, but I'm not 100% sure. I don't know what's up with them. They've been breeding like crazy, but what else? Oh, false water cobras.
There you go.
They've been breeding like crazy.
Do you have like are there local or large reptile shows that you would attend and vend at, or is that like, or is like having your own store almost like having your own personal permanent reptile display constantly? Like,
I like the expos because for me they're like a vacation. Like, okay. You stay in a hotel, you talk to all these people and stuff. It's the only time I leave this building, because like, I mean, I live in this building, so I'm here 24/7,
right?
But we have I do two in Edmonton, which is like an hour and a half one direction.
Okay.
Three in Calgary, which is an hour and a half the other direction. And then this year I told myself I was going to do the biggest one, like the Toronto Reptile Expo, which I would have to fly to that one.
Oof.
Okay.
But I don't know how the season is just yet. Like, if I can book later and, you know, I've got some great stuff.
Right.
If I got to fly, I'm only going to do just one table. And
how would you would you ship the animals to meet you there, or
yeah, I would just bring them to the airport with me and you know, fly them over and
that must be awesome. If I rolled up to the airport here with a truckload of snakes, he'd be like, get the hell,
take your shoes off and your belt,
what the hell. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you could, like, realistically, could you book snakes?
Probably.
I don't think you, in the United States, I don't think you could book snakes a trip like you would. Say,
well, they're
like
not going to be in the, no, cat. No.
No, I think, I know when I have shipped, when I ship Air Canada, it's not in the main airport. It's a building on the same property.
All right.
Right.
So it's like
right.
And I bring them there like 4 hours before the flight.
Right.
So it would likely be a flight the same day. Maybe right. The same play. I don't know. But
maybe something, or
yeah, and the same, I would airport. Have a yeah. friend on the other end, or when I get there, then I'll hang out and receive them, and then go to my hotel or a friend's house or something out there.
Yeah, so it's Delta Dash. Because, I mean, I've had people who go to Tinley Park and they FedEx the snakes to themselves. Like, they send them out the day previous to arrive, and then they don't get to the hotel. Like, they don't, the snakes are not there, they're delayed, they're somewhere else. And it's like, I mean, they eventually got there, because usually you arrive the Friday, and I think they had it where the snakes actually showed up Saturday morning before the, like, as the show was opening. So
yeah,
that was that. But
I had that, like, where somebody else came from out east and they asked me to ship all their animals back to them.
Okay.
And I did that, but that's why I don't want to go FedEx. I would rather just go to the airport and not
spend the money to be reassured that they're going to be there.
Kind of, realistically, like, when I ship a box with FedEx, like, I'm still paying to go out there. I'm still paying like $100. Whereas any boxes I've sent out there through Air Canada has been like between $100 and $150. So it's like,
that's not bad. Yeah.
If you're going to make, you know, hopefully at a show, then whatever.
Yeah. Split the difference, you know.
Yeah.
There's I'm curious, with you being on the retail side of things when it comes to the reptile market, like, there's been a lot of doom and gloom, right? But me and Owen believe that that's just bullshit, and just how the you know, because he's selling snakes, everybody we know is selling snakes. Do you feel like, you know, are you at all concerned? Is the reptile market strong for you?
Nice right now.
It ain't nice right now? Okay.
Yeah. Last couple months has been excruciating. But the funny thing is, the rare, more valuable stuff, no problem. Because those guys are hardcores. It doesn't matter what the economy's like. I mean, you know what I mean? You see a rare carpet pop up, it doesn't matter how you're doing, you're going to buy it. Like,
right.
Whereas the guy who's coming in to buy, you know, like a new pet lizard, if he's hurting, he's not buying a new pet lizard, right?
Right.
So I've noticed lately it's been no problem for me to sell, yeah, rare, expensive stuff. But the day to day, you're not selling any crested geckos or
gotcha. Smaller one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's kind of weird that way. Yeah.
So did that just happen by accident that your personal collection is more of the rare stuff and your shop is more of the mainstream stuff, or was that on purpose? Did you do that? Or is it just that you like the rare stuff? And
oh, I just like the rare stuff. Yeah.
Okay. It just worked out that way. Okay.
I got distracted at one point because I was working for a big store. And they got me breeding all kinds of stuff there. And then, so I kind of got interested in ball pythons for like a season or two.
Uh-huh.
I got some myself and was breeding them. But I quickly got rid of them all. I just always have liked that from a little kid. I liked all the rare stuff. Not the everyday stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, there's something about seeing it all the time. It's like,
I used to get lots of morphs too.
Yeah.
But over the last 2 years, I was like, why? Like, there's so many that stuff I see get passed around on Kijiji, like online and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Mm-hmm. I've never sold an olive python and seen it without a home afterwards, you know?
Right.
Gotcha. So I was like, well, whatever. Like, I can buy that stuff from buddies for the store.
Yeah.
No sense in breeding it. Cause I used to only really breed that stuff for the store.
Right. Right.
And it's fun, but
right.
There's more purpose behind the other stuff, I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
100%. Is there a species of python that you don't have that you want really bad?
Yeah. That you want to add?
Pythons,
just Bolens. I know Bolens. You said that earlier. Yeah. Okay.
If I ever could have Owen Pellies, yeah. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
Heck yeah. Okay.
I'd be all over that. But yeah. I would have a big collection of scrubs, but in Alberta, we're not allowed scrub pythons.
I was going to ask that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Otherwise, I would have them.
Yeah.
But no, other than that, I mean, even in regards to the boas, there's like a couple species that are not in my possession, but it's already sorted out.
Okay.
And you do emeralds too, right? Don't you have emeralds as well?
They're arboreal. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Emeralds are honestly my favorite of the arboreals. Like if I could have 100 emeralds, I that would be the goal.
Right.
But those suckers, I've told myself I'm done buying them. Like, until one gets offered to me again.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
They're too problematic. Like, that's the only gambling I do is buying emeralds. Like,
I'm excited to see what Ron does. Ron St. Pierre. I don't know if you've watched what he's been doing with his emeralds and stuff.
Yeah.
And the outside enclosures and the rain and all that stuff. I'm curious to see if that sort of Ron's a smart guy. And
it would be nice. We could start pumping out northerns.
Yeah, it would be nice. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, there's nobody here.
No.
There was a guy, Rob McRobbie, who used to breed emeralds out here, relatively consistent. But he got out of it years and years ago. So there's nobody out here doing them. Like, if you want to buy a captive emerald here,
good luck.
Got it.
Yeah, I don't care if you got 20,000. You're not finding one.
I think that's what happens though, is that sometimes somebody has great success with the species, and if they bail or something happens, God forbid, to their animals or their facility, we may never be where we were again until somebody else steps up to it. It's just like.
Yeah,
it's difficult. Some of the people who have a ton of success don't realize that they're the one thing keeping the train moving forward and stuff like that on certain species.
Yeah, it's funny how that works. Yeah, mm-hmm. People appreciate it. Like, and then it's gone. And
that was I'm. Justin's probably going to punch me in the throat when he sees me because I forget the guy's name, but he was the guy, he bred water dragons, and he was kind of like the guy that did it. And then he passed away, or he stopped breeding them or something like that. I know.
Water dragons?
Yeah.
Like Bert Vander.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's the same type of thing. He was like, you know, I don't know. You worry about that too with people like, you know, Nick and Ryan Young that have like, you know, those rare pythons and stuff. That
think about it this way. Lisa's had fantastic success with her blackface white lip.
Right.
And it's one female that I think is the mom of all her babies.
Yeah, she just hatched another clutch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's crushing it. Something happens with that one female, or Lisa decides tomorrow she's done, and she goes to another, and that female goes to a different person. We may never get to that point where that female produces again, in which case you've now taken a steady stream of blackface white lip out of the American population. So
sure.
Yeah, that it can turn on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why, yeah, people got to put more emphasis into some of that uncommon stuff. Well, you even look at, like, you know, rose hair tarantulas and emperor scorpions used to be a dime a dozen.
Right.
They bred them. And then all of a sudden they quit exporting them. And now, I don't know what it's like there, but I know here, good luck getting yourself, you know, a rose hair tarantula or a emperor scorpion. You're paying $200-$300 if you can find one, and you can't. And they used to be $20, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they used to be the quick and easy thing right now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool, man. You want to go on the wrap-up questions?
We can do that. So I guess we'll ask real quick, because we already kind of covered the stuff that you want to have. What is one species that you may have gotten rid of that you want another crack at?
Well, I don't get rid of stuff.
That's where you mess up. All right. Yes. Well, yeah. Okay.
God, man, the only thing I can think of that I've ever gotten rid of that I wouldn't mind again would be spotted pythons. That's crazy. Yeah.
Okay.
I think.
Spotted pythons are cool.
Spotted pythons are cool.
I got some children right now, and I hate those suckers.
Okay, well, yeah, all right. Well.
Those like to bite.
All right.
Yeah, they sure do.
If you could plan a herping trip anywhere in the world, where'd you go? What would you find? Or what would you hope to find?
It would... Papua, maybe. It would be like Indonesia somewhere area, anywhere in there. Mm-hmm. You're finding, you know, all those cool pythons, all the coolest monitors are there.
Yeah.
Australia too, but I think Indo for me is
you
get more
complex monitors, you know. It would be somewhere in there. I think
What was that park they went to out there where it's like the water monitors were just chilling and you could just
In Bangkok or whatever?
Yeah, out in Bangkok. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would just be fun.
Yeah, I would really like to see to try and find tricolor monitors in the wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be really cool.
Tricolor monitors. I never heard of that species.
No.
Through the Google machine.
Like the holy grail of
yeah.
complex.
Really?
They're pretty.
Yeah, they're spazzy though, man.
Oh, man, terrorist.
That is the exact word I gave to my friend had spinalosis.
I got those too, yeah.
Yeah. He's like, look at these. I'm like, they look like spazzy little roughnecks. Like it was just, and that's all it was. It was just like, yeah, no. It was
Oh wow.
Yeah, they're pretty.
That's interesting. Yep.
So wow. The teeth on them. Let's find one in the wild.
Wow. I like learning about a new species I never heard of.
Yeah, they're
I'm not a monitor guy per se, but wow, that's really cool.
Now they're cool. They're closest related to a blue tail.
Toof.
Oof. Okay.
Yeah.
And are they're not in captivity, or they are in captivity?
I've got them, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah. They haven't been bred yet, but they're just like spastic, and the teeth are like a croc monitor. Like
are they a bigger monitor or
smaller?
Well, this is street folk. they're like a blue tail size wise.
Okay.
Like they get 6 foot. the tail's really long, but they're, yeah, typical, you know, quince blue tail kind of size, longer than a quince, but
step down from a croc, but
yeah, still. Yeah. But the, yeah, they're crazy, man. Like, yeah.
That'd be fun. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
My male got, he got messed up pretty good by the female.
By the female?
Oh. Oh, really?
Yeah. Huge, huge lacerations.
That's the risk of doing business with like monitor breeding and what I found with like white lip breeding and stuff like that. It's like, here's my pristine, my gorgeous, beautiful. Now it's all scarred to shit. Thank you very much. Like that, you weren't supposed to do that to each other. Like, right. Yeah, it's what happens sometimes, but I hate it. Cause it's like, I had the most gorgeous, blackface white lip.
Yeah.
And the female just split him down the head. And now he's got like this fish hook scar on the back of his head. And I'm like, and yes, my eyes go to it immediately every time I see him. Yeah.
Of course.
It's always right there. And it's like, great, great. I see that.
Well, it was eight.
Yeah. It's, wow. God, I hate you. Yeah. But that happens. But
cool.
I guess the last one would be, is there any, if you could redo your entire reptile experience, what would you do differently and what would you do the same?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We pulled no punches here.
I would not get distracted. Yeah.
Okay.
I've stuck to those main projects and not been like, oh, you know, I could bring snow boas or, oh, like, I would have just stuck to the specific projects I wanted. Yeah. And probably relocated to the U.S. because that's a process. So I should have worked on that earlier.
Yeah. When you relocate, are you able to bring some of your guys with you, some of your animals? Or
I mean, I'm a big dreamer, man. My plan would be to export the bulk
of higher collection,
minus the Indo stuff and the Appendix One stuff.
Right.
The Australian stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it would basically be all the Indo stuff.
I would have to say it would only be the Indo stuff.
Yeah.
God.
My plan, yeah.
That seems like it's your most favorite. I'm sure you could re-up on a lot of the Australian stuff.
We know some US people. Yeah.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, we know some guys. Yeah. But that's got to be tough, because there has to be one that doesn't fit in with like an Appendix One animal or something like that, where you're like, would you even be able to get it here? I mean, or you probably could. It's just, would you have to pay a freaking leg to get it?
Yeah, I mean, the only ones that I really have, like, I don't know what you guys are like for, like, not my favorite anyway. Like, the Chinese crocodile lizards, I would be fine without those.
I don't know. I don't know about those.
I think we have them. I'm not
probably
sure.
Probably somewhere, yeah.
I think
they're cool. Yeah. They're... I know you can't have the Fiji iguanas.
No, that was ruined for us by several people. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Like, and then you got doomerals in the Madagascar grounds. Like, can't find a female here anyway, so there's no whatever. But I think everything I could reacquire. It would just be the work that I put in to, like,
to get them.
The Indo ones that I wouldn't want to give up.
Yeah.
Any of the CITES one stuff I have, though, I'd be fine.
Oh.
Letting it go.
The Chinese crocodile is your Shinisaurus.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm like, that sounds familiar. My friend breathed these. Yeah. I got you. I know a guy.
So whatever. Yeah.
Yep. So cool. All right. Okay. Well, is there anything you wanted to toss out there for people to follow you, check up with you if they're interested in buying snakes or want to plan a trip to check out your shop?
Yeah, I mean, I'm most active on Instagram. I'm a snake guy, not a business guy. So, I mean,
aren't we all?
I could do it a lot better, but I'm preoccupied with animals. The Instagram is mainly like my breeding projects and stuff. It doesn't really showcase this anything to do with the store.
Cool.
But that's where I'm most active, which is just the_reptile_shop.
Okay.
Cool.
And then the store's Facebook is the Reptile Shop Red Deer.
Okay.
So, and then I have a website, but it's not updated, and I'm more active on Facebook or Instagram for sure.
And you have a YouTube channel too, right? Under
Yeah, yeah, that's just the reptile shop, Red Deer.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll put all the links in the show
notes. Yeah. Too, yeah, so you people can check that out and
check them out and whatnot.
Stuff like that. Well, I mean, thanks, man. This has been freaking great, and hopefully you have some luck with some white lips this year. I'm excited to see if you check those boxes, because I think from what you were telling me, you have a chance of getting all the Bothrichillis in 1 year, and I am extremely jealous of that. So
I was we'll probably pass out.
I mean, I think I would too. I would lose consciousness for Ryan. He's like, ah, it's a typical Thursday. Like, screw you, dude.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So that, I wish you luck with that. That'd be great to see. So
yeah, you'll be seeing for sure. Yeah.
Oh, good, good, good. That's awesome. But yeah. Thanks, man, for coming on. It's been a blast. And absolutely. I'm going to hold you personally responsible for getting Apodora stuck in my goddamn head again. So yeah.
I mean, by the looks of it, there'll be some hatching soon.
There you go.
I guess Ryan just got eggs, didn't he?
Ryan got eggs, and Riley's tap dancing around it. He's like, I'm not sure. His female's like inverted, and we're like, yeah, he does the same thing I do, where it's I refuse to acknowledge it until their baby's pipping that I might have eggs. Yeah,
Apodora are bad for that too. Yeah, inverted, off food.
Yeah,
roll back over.
Right. We'll see. Hopefully, I gotta keep it, you know, in between the navigational beacons. But
yeah.
Right on.
All right, cool. So Eric, what do we have to do as far as shopkeeping?
So you know the things. Oh, we're on the social medias. Oh, you know. Do we have to keep saying it? I mean, good
God
Lord, man.
Damn it. It's like what Cody said. We're not vicious people. We're snake people. Shut up.
I don't know. There's some things that you can look at. You can see us. Let's see. I'll run down it real quick. So NPR Network is all the podcasts on the network. Like I said, Bo has just came out with a good one with Quetzal Dwyer. So that's a cool one. We just have one coming out. Well, you'll probably hear it before you definitely will hear it before you hear this one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Dale DiNardo, where we did Python Eggs and we talked all about it. That was a really
that
good
was
show.
Cool. That was really one.
Good. You might enjoy that one, Cody.
That one messed me up. That one.
Because he was like talking scientific, but about Python eggs. But he's like one of those guys that's sort of like, he's kind of like Zach Loafman. He's like kind of in both worlds. Where
he's like, we observed the python keepers doing this, and I wanted to know why. I'm like, yeah, why did it do that? Like, that was, yeah. So
that was a good one.
Yeah.
I don't know. What else do we got? We got
cold-blooded caffeine, where you can get the coffee. Cold-blooded cafe, where you can get the rodents. NPR 10 gets you 10% off your first order.
Teespring store, and then
Teespring
we have our
store, the Patreon. We're going to do a Patreon stream soon, so go get on that, and you can ask us questions directly and come hang with us. I have people asking about Carpet Fest, so we'll talk about that soon.
I've got a few people too ask me about that.
Well, I can only you know hit them so many times before they eventually overwhelm me. So we'll have to talk about that. I'll have to have a meeting.
100%.
Yep. That's it. That's all we have for everybody this week. We'll catch everyone back here next time for some more Morelia Python Radio. Good night.